Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson. Here on the Thursday edition of the Yard, I had to punt yesterday. A lot going on. I'm working through these final book edits, and everything leaves me, goes back to the editors, and then heads off the layout. So it's all being typeset. And that process is ongoing. Really, really eager for you guys to read this book. And I tell you, you're going back over it. If I do say so myself, I'm proud of the book. And I'm proud of the history that we have been able to unearth and share with a new generation of Bulldog fans. And I believe, without any reservation, I believe in many respects that I have maybe affirmed the legacy of Duty Noble. And I don't say that to be braggadocious or anything like that. I think this is a book that needed to be written a long time ago. And it was not, so it's my honor to write it. But if you hadn't done so, you can go to DutyNobleBook.com and you can pre-order. Probably going to be September. We talked about late August, early September. I suspect it'll be September. But nevertheless, it's. I tell people all the time, I have so many people that reach out to me, and I'm grateful for each of them. They say, Steve, you've written several books now. What advice can you offer? And probably the biggest advice that I can offer is, number one, you have to have a story. There are a lot of people that want to write a book. They say, I just want to write a book to have that, you know, on my resume. I want to have been an author. I want to take something and create that and share my experience or create some great tale. And many writers have those aspirations. But I can tell you, a lot of people don't have a story. And I was very fortunate, of course, with the Hugh Freeze situation, to have a story of interest for a lot of people. And we sold a ton of books. And but it was because of the subject matter. You know, I think at the time I was a good writer. I think I'm much better today. There's a lot of things I would do differently, even with every book that I've written, maybe with the exception of When the Bottom Falls. And probably Dogpile, I would do differently. You know, there's some things, those historical books, you learn, right? I mean, you get better as a writer and you get better as a researcher. And the Dude is probably the most detailed book that I have ever written. There are some names in there that were very, very important to me. Some names that I learned for the first time. Like running back Otto Schwill. Do you know that name? Otto Schwill? Familiar with him? Yeah, when Duty was our quarterback, he was our halfback. And he was a stud. Then we had Boots Johnson. You familiar with Boots? I suspect you're not. You know, Boots, of course, predated Blondie Black. Harper Davis, you know, some names of old there. But, working through some of this stuff, you know, kind of the custom back then was you listed people by their initials and then their last name. But I just felt, you know what, I don't want it to be quite so formal. There were a couple of those that I wasn't able to, you know, really pare down. But it was very important to me to get that figured out. You know, and there was one here recently that editor sent back to me and said, hey, you mentioned this Russell character, but what's the first name? And I just missed it. Went back and found it, took some research, took about 2 hours for one sentence, right? Because once you get the first name in there, you know, every subsequent mention, you can just use the last name. But I missed it. And his name was Claude Russell. Maybe your great-grandfather. Maybe your great-great-grandfather. And his baseball nickname was Heck. Claude Heck Russell. So to the Russell family, I have worked painstakingly to ensure that your loved one, your descendant, your ancestor is properly represented in this book. It's just very, very important to me. And so you get back to it, and there's a lot of people out there that have questions and things like that. I'm just going to tell you, some of these stories are going to blow you away. They're absolutely going to blow you away. I think chapter five, kind of details the 1915 65-0 win over Ole Miss. And it gives the backstory of that game for the first time in over 100 years. And I have researched this stuff so extensively, guys, I can tell you. It's so incredible. The lack of information about a lot of stuff kind of pre-World War I in athletics. A lot of great stories out there about the war, some great human interest stories. But a lot of the sports stuff, you got to really dig for it. And I have. And so I shared that, you know, we have so many people that say, hey, Steve, you know, what's the toughest part of writing a book? Guys, I can tell you, it is so fun to plan a book. It's fun to research a book because you unearth all these great little stories and things like that. And you think, oh, I didn't know that. You know, I would submit to you, there's not many people on the planet that know as much about Mississippi State athletics history than I do. And it's because I've written these historical books. And I found so many great things that got me excited. I was like, this is great. How come nobody knows this? Well, now you're going to know. But you work through the planning part of it. You outline a book. You do your research. And you start writing a book. The hard part is finishing a book. And you'd say, well, I'm done writing it. I'm done. No, it's not that simple. You know, because it leaves me and it goes back to, my publisher. And then it goes through a round of edits. And then it comes back to me as, you remember when you wrote a paper, you spent a lot of time and effort on it, and it comes back to you, and it's got red ink all over it? That's how it comes back to me. And a lot of times it's like, hey, we need some more context here. We need to explain this a little bit better. We need greater detail here. What does this mean, right? There's a lady involved in the editing process that kind of is the soccer mom editor. And what I mean by that is, I have a tendency, after working in sports as long as I have, to sometimes write with jargon that only makes sense to very, very, very astute sports fans. And that's not being disrespectful, right? I mean, there's just some things out there. Like, I'll tell you this, last book, I guess we go back to Dogpile. Yeah, Dogpile. We had a discussion about playing out the string. Now, those of us that have been in baseball for a long time, you understand what that means. We're playing out the string. It's basically we have nothing left to play for, right? So the season's over. There's not going to be any postseason. We're playing out the string. And then because of the fact you've got nothing to really play for, you begin playing for next year. And so playing out the string basically means you're going to start playing your second, third team guys as well. You're playing out the string. So everybody out there. So that has been a part of the lexicon of my life for as long as I can remember. But I put that in the book, and then multiple editors are like, well, what does this mean? What does this mean, playing out the string? And so that aspect of it, you got to learn, number one, you want to have it soft enough that people can absorb it, but you also want to use language that makes sense and applies to your topic and your story. But you don't want people to have to put your book down and get on their phones and go to Google and say, what does this phrase mean? And so that aspect of it is very can be frustrating at times. But here's the thing that I've learned seven books in, is that every one of those editing notes makes the book better. Even if we don't accept the change, even if I go back and say, hey, no, I disagree with this, we're not going to change this. I understand kind of where people are and how they absorb the material. And I kind of write with that in mind. You know, as I'm beginning to write something out there, I'm thinking, okay, is this just something that maybe the casual fan won't know? So I'm going to explain that in greater detail. So basically what happens is the more times you go through this editing process, you begin to catch it on the front end. So the editing process this time has been much easier. I think it's because I turned in better copy to begin with. But if you're going to write a book, and I don't recommend it, okay? And I don't say that because I don't want any competition. I think everybody should do what they want to do. But I can tell you it is not for the meek. Yeah, it's not for the soft at heart going through the editing process. Because for me, my heart is in every word. And so that when somebody else comes back and says, hey, this isn't right or this doesn't make sense, and when that first happens to you, that first couple book cycles, you take it really sensitively. I do anyway. You know, it's like, what do you know? And if there's sometimes you just get mad, you want to throw your hands up and just say to hell with the whole thing. You know, let's just not do it. You know, you spent 6 months writing the book and, you know, your feelings get hurt about something. And you say to hell with it. But in time, you kind of understand those people are trying to make you better. Trying to make you better. And that's not just in writing, that's in life. You know, we talk about players being willing to take coaching, employees being willing to take coaching. It's same thing for writers. You got to be willing to take coaching. It's the only way you get better. And if it only makes sense to you, it doesn't make sense. It's simple as that. I mean, you're writing a book for commerce, right? And so you've got to write it in a way that people can understand what you're trying to convey. So that's where we are. Hey, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of this show. I love them. My plan is to have Bulldog Burger Company for dinner tonight. Probably get it to go. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited. You wake up in a day and say, you know what? It's a Bulldog Burger Company day today. And all of a sudden, I get a little pep in my step, right? Hey, you know what? Hey, no matter what the day brings, I know what I'm going to have for dinner, right? And I know that I'm going to get a quality experience. I'm going to get a great portion at a great price. I'm going to get great service. There are just so many great things about Bulldog Burger Company. Three great locations, right? University Drive here in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. It's a great thing, guys and gals. It is. And you're great, too. And you're going to walk out of there feeling great because you've made a good investment with your dining dollar, because you're going to get more than you pay for. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. Get that chocolate shake to go. Make the whole thing an experience. Okay, we're not just going to dine and dash, right? We're going to go in there and we're going to sit down. We're going to have a great experience. You sit down, you just kind of let the day, just kind of the waves of stress of the day just kind of leave you. Put your feet under their table and just let them take care of you. Nobody's going to do a better job of that than Bulldog Burger Company. Maybe you have the Lauren, maybe you have the Bryant. I always ask for the specials because you never know. Sometimes they like to test new product. And I've got FOMO really bad, the fear of missing out. I don't like to miss on anything. And so I like to try the new things before they become the new things, right? You make them a special before they make the menu. And I like to give my feedback. I say, I really like this one or this one. Nah, it's okay. I don't want you guys to have an experience I don't have. So understand. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet. M-E-A-T. All right. We're going to talk some baseball portal stuff later in the show. But maybe you are not aware of this. I'm going to bring you up to speed on this. There were some changes made back in the spring. And you know how it is. Like we're in the middle of baseball season, right? We just came off of basketball season. So maybe football wasn't really on our radar outside of our group, right? We're in spring football, so we're thinking about that. We're not thinking about the season. But there have been some changes in the rules for 2024. It's going to be a lot more like the pro game in many respects. Did you know that we're going to have a two-minute warning this year? It's true. At the end of the second and fourth quarters, we're going to have a two-minute warning, which will afford teams opportunity to have that free timeout. So time management is going to be an even more important thing. And it may be easier to deal with because of the fact you get the two-minute warning. And that was the thing, too. You know, we started the running clock and everything, and there were a lot of people that complained. You know, later in the year, you know, it's like, hey, you know, they're shortening the game. We're getting a limited number of plays, especially at the end of halves when you're trying to win a game or go into the halftime locker room with some momentum. And so this is one of the things they decided to implement. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not a guy that's I'm an agent for change when I think it needs it. There's sometimes we mess with stuff for the wrong reasons. And you and I both know they didn't want to shorten the game of football for me and you. They wanted to shorten it so they can get more games on and have more commercials and make more money, right? That's what it's all about. And at the end of the day, money rules the world. The older I get, the more I understand that. And so now the two-minute warning comes around, and that also gives the opportunity for everybody to be happy, right? It gives you a chance to kind of get a reset late in a half, but also, too, it gives our advertisers an opportunity to cash in, too, because everybody's going to be paying attention late in ball games, right? And all of a sudden, we can stretch this thing out. I mean, how many times have we talked about that, you know, National Football League, and now really in college football, there'll be 50 seconds left, and it'll take 20 minutes to play it out, right? It's true. You can shake it down all you want to. But you ever Googled yourself? You may be alarmed to know exactly how much of your private information and data is out there for anybody to access. Whether it be your phone number, your home address, or details about your family. It could be your kids' names, their ages. Whether you agree to this disclosure or not. And that's because data brokers are collecting and selling your information to marketers, scammers, and basically anyone willing to pay. It's the reason robocallers know your name, and while ads seem to follow you on every digital platform out there. Well, Aura fights back for you. They remove your personal data from broker sites and keep it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a data breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just data broker removal. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your life online. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager to keep all your logins safe. They even give you spam call protection to cut off those stupid scammers. Aura also scans the dark web regularly for your most sensitive information, like your social security number, bank logins, passwords, and they will notify you instantly if you are somehow exposed. If your identity is ever stolen, you're backed up by up to $5 million in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support to help you recover everything quickly. Other services charge about the same, but they only cover one or two areas. With Aura, you get it all. Data broker removal, credit and identity monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all with one simple app. Aura removes what is already exposed, protects what isn't, and puts you back in control. Right now, you can try Aura free for 14 days when you visit aura.com/remove. That gives them plenty of time to go ahead and start protecting your data. They can remove your personal information from data broker sites. Sign up today at aura.com/remove and get the peace of mind that your privacy, identity, and finances are all safeguarded. That's Aura, aura.com/remove. Certain terms and conditions apply. Be sure and check it out today at aura.com. 2-minute warnings being added this year. That'll be interesting. I'm actually in favor of this rule. I think it's a great rule for the NFL. And again, the NFL implemented that years ago to satisfy their broadcasters. But I think when I think about how these games are played and how important those last possessions are, it adds a different dynamic to the college game that maybe hadn't existed. Yeah, just by adding the 2-minute warning. All right, direct helmet communication. This is also something that's coming from the NFL. And it makes perfect sense. And that's the thing, too. How many times do we see this? You know, we had the check with me thing. Remember when they first started doing that, how much we hated it? Because it slowed down the flow of the game. You know, everybody goes to the line, and then we take a dummy cadence, and then everybody stops. The quarterback comes out from behind center, and everybody looks at the sideline. To get an audible, because now they've seen a look at the defense, they want to change the play, or maybe they'll think, hey, we're already in the right set, we'll run with this. Now you're going to have direct helmet communication, so there won't be quite as much signaling going on to the quarterback. There'll be some of it, and of course they'll still want to communicate, you know, formations to guys and things like that. But what's also interesting about this, if you've ever watched Hard Knocks or any of those NFL behind-the-scenes things, you hear coaches all the time that'll say, hey, throw it to so-and-so, it's a touchdown. Throw it to so-and-so, it's a touchdown. And so there'll be direct communication. I don't know all the parameters of that. I remember the years when I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Most prestigious sports franchise in all sports. Maybe them and the New York Yankees. And I know we've got a lot of bandwagon Dallas Cowboy fans, and I'm kind of one of them too because I want to root for Dak. But years ago, when Cordell Stewart played for Pittsburgh, he was slash, right? Would play some at quarterback, would play some at wide receiver, and he had the green sticker on the helmet too because he was a quarterback. And then the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones alleged that was an improper benefit, I guess you could say. It was an unfair advantage. And they said, well, let Deion wear it too. Now, it's funny. Now, Deion Sanders, of course, now a college coach. And they're implementing this. So I think it's a good thing. Maybe it'll speed some things up, probably for teams like Ole Miss, and we expect Mississippi State, teams that run tempo. I think this is a very important thing because rather than a quarterback having to stop, look at the sidelines, get the play, and then communicate it, he's going to get it basically as the other play is unfolding, right? They can go ahead and make their play call while everybody's getting to the line. And then so much of that is, you know, hand signals from there. You bark out the cadence, you yell out the play, you don't have to huddle. I think it's going to actually add another benefit to teams that run tempo. Right? Because let's say you complete a pass. Well, while the the ball carrier is still fighting for extra yardage, and they're still setting the football. The quarterback's already going to have the play, you know, and he'll be able to run to the line. So I think from a tempo standpoint, the direct helmet communication aspect of this thing is probably a good thing. All right, first down timing. Now, it's so interesting. Again, this goes kind of back to what we talked about with 2-minute warning. Game clock is going to continue to run after a first down when it's gained in bounds, right? That's similar to the NFL, unless the chains move inside the final 2 minutes. So there's different timing rules depending on where we are in the game. I never fully understood why we needed to change this, you know. And again, there's always money involved. You know, anytime you get a first down, the clock stopped, at least until they set the ball, right? I didn't think it was that big a deal, but apparently the people at ESPN and Fox and people like that, it's like, hey, we need these clocks to run. So they do. So it's going to be very, very, very NFL-like timing-wise. Consecutive timeouts are prohibited. I thought we outlawed this some time ago, to be honest with you. I thought we did. I thought we said you can't take back-to-back timeouts. And then it kind of continued, but now it's official. Consecutive timeouts are prohibited, so you can no longer ice the kicker. So you can call one timeout before a field goal attempt, but you can't, like, wait, and then go running up to the referee and call a second timeout to ice him again. My thoughts on that is I think it's a silly rule because who cares, right? I think that's part of the deal. Icing the kicker, I think, is part of football. If I got three timeouts, you shouldn't be able to tell me when I can and can't use them. That's how I feel. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but that's how I feel. I think that is probably I guess I don't understand the impetus of the rule change, right? It says, you know, head coaches will also not be able to signal a timeout before an offensive or a defensive snap. And I think what we're doing there, and I think that's probably a good thing. There are a lot of times that people say, hey, after this play, I'm going to call a timeout. I think that kind of flies in the spirit of the rule. If you want to call a timeout, you call a timeout. But you shouldn't be able to predetermine. Even if you want to try to save a few ticks on the clock, and I get that aspect of it, but the official should never have recognized that. You call timeout when you want the timeout, not in advance of that. So I think that's a good rule. The whole ice and the kicker thing I think is kind of silly. But that's kind of where we are. Now we're gearing up for football season. You know, media days are going to be here soon. Then you got an opportunity now to kind of, okay, well, Steve, I missed that, you know, when they rolled that out a few months ago. Because when the games come on, trust me, there's going to be a lot of people that don't listen to our show, that maybe don't keep up, and all of a sudden they'll be like, hey, I don't like this. And it takes us about a month, right, to kind of settle in. It's okay, this is how things are. It's going to be a much different deal in that respect. So, again, it's going to kind of mirror the NFL game, which I think is a good thing. The NFL is a good product. It really is. It is a good product. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes that we forget. You know, there's so many things that happen, you know, at the pro level and then kind of work their way down to the rest of the deal, right? If it happens in Major League Baseball, eventually it's going to filter down to college baseball. Same thing for football. But one other thing, too, I didn't touch on. Are you guys fans of the in-game interview? Because I'm not. And again, maybe I'm the crotchety old man. I hate it in baseball more than I do in football. Because they want to do the in-game interview like ESPN. It's like, okay, we're going to have Coach Jim Schlossnagel here at the half of the inning. The guy's trying to coach his team, right? And nothing meaningful ever comes from those interviews. You're not going to learn anything. It's really just kind of a flex for the network. It's like, hey, we're going to do this. We're going to do the in-game interview. And we're going to learn nothing from it. You know, it's like, hey, well, Coach, what do you think that we should do? I would probably throw some more strikes. Get on base more. I mean, it's so stupid. And for football, it's like, you know, how many times do you hear, well, we got to execute better. We got to eliminate the silly penalties, and we got to execute better, right? I mean, it's just, you learn nothing from it. But now, the permanent rule says that head coaches can conduct interviews with broadcast partners after the first and third quarters. So it's not just going to be at halftime as he's running off the field. It's not just going to be postgame. Now we can do it every quarter. I'm not saying that everybody's going to agree to it, but that's a new thing too. They used it last year as kind of an experimental thing in some conferences, and now it's permanent. Great. Let's see if we can't distract the coaches even more. Let's, hey, coach, don't forget. Listen, I know we're down a touchdown here late trying to score, but don't forget you got the interview coming up here where you got to just say things that don't matter. You just got to repeat some coach speak, and we'll call it a day. It didn't benefit anybody. All right. And so there was another rule, too, that's interesting. From the NCAA release, the panel did not support a uniform rule proposal made by the Football Rules Committee. Panel members were not comfortable with on-field officials having to enforce the recommended rule, but we don't know what the rule was. The panel understands the Rules Committee's concern, but encourages the committee to look for an administrative solution that does not include game enforcement officials. There's so much of that stuff that happens kind of behind the scenes that doesn't make a lot of sense. And I haven't looked at the full rule proposal. It didn't pass anyway. But basically, they were saying that there was going to be a official warning for any uniform violations that came after a timeout. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, it's like, you know, it's either a violation or it's not. Also, some technology stuff. You're going to be able to use tablets. That's not a new thing. And then there's talk about the implementation of a 15-yard horse collar tackle penalty inside the tackle box. That's always been something that's interesting to me. The risk of injury is great no matter where the tackle occurs. But, again, those are the things. Things are going to be a little bit different. Every year they make all these proposals. They're not always accepted by the D1 committee. But here we are. And we look forward to college football, a different look, college football. Let's get into today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. Blair Chandler is my friend, your friend, our friend in the mortgage industry. If you are looking to close on a home, you're looking to get a game day condo, maybe it's your first home, maybe it's your second home, maybe you're looking to refi. I don't know your needs, but I know that they can be met by one Blair Chandler. Visit him at closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R.com. And let me give you his number. It's between us girls here. 601-500-2344. 601-500-2344. That goes directly to Blair. So when you're thinking about doing something with real estate, whether it be buying some land, buying your first home, take the guesswork out of it and let a proven winner get you to the closing table. Blair Chandler, longtime friend of mine, friend of yours, maybe a friend you haven't met yet, right? And you're going to look back one day and say, you know what? We had a great experience. I want to recommend Blair to our friends. We had several Boneyard listeners that have closed with Blair. 23 years of experience in this industry. And nobody stays in an industry 20-plus years by accident. This is a guy who knows how to get things done. He can be your advocate with underwriting. And that can be a difficult process, man. They can ask for, you know, a lock of your child's first haircut, you know, a note from your mom. Your fifth grade report card. There's a lot of things they're going to ask for that didn't make a lot of sense to you, but they make sense to Blair. So let him help you through that process. Again, that's closewithblair.com. All right, it's hot. I don't know if you've noticed. It's hot out here. So we're going to do a top 10 today about the heat. Not the Miami heat, the actual heat. I've said many times, if I ever leave Mississippi, it's going to be because he's dead come summers. And listen, I get it. You know, all you folks that have your boats on the reservoir and it's great, and then you get sunburned and then it, you know, can't go to work on Monday. But all that I understood, the older I get, man, the more this heat bothers me. It's true. I don't know if I'm just getting older or the heat's getting hotter or both. But you walk outside nowadays, it's like you're just walking into a hairdryer. Right, you walk outside and just waves of that heat hit you in the face. So we're going to do a song. We're going to do a top 10 of songs about the heat. We'll start number 10. Anytime we can work Kiss into the show, this is the title track off an album that a lot of people like. It's Hotter Than Hell. And I don't know that I believe that. It's a bit, you know, metaphorical, I guess. But I don't know that we can quantify that. But... really good album. And, maybe not the hits that some people are accustomed to, but if you like the Kiss catalog, this one might be worth a listen. And again, Hotter Than Hell from Kiss, number 10. Number 9, not that this applies to any of us, I don't think. This is an AC/DC track that actually is more of a blues track, and AC/DC is not a heavy metal band. They're a hard rock band. They're a rock and roll band, always have been. Not a lot of tricks with these guys. They just kind of plug in and play. Of course, we've lost some of those guys over the years. But a great track called Heat Seeker. Heat Seeker, number 9 on your list from AC/DC. And for those about to rock, we salute you. Number 8, this will make Roy happy. I think Roy thinks we could put a top 10 together around this band. I had a chance to visit with Roy recently, and he was so excited about going to see Night Ranger play soon. And I told the wife, I said, Roy thinks that Night Ranger had a bunch of hits. Oh, they did? Well, they had a couple. Okay, they had a couple. Let's be honest about that, too. If you hadn't had Night Ranger on MTV every 15 minutes with Sister Christian, would they have had those other hits? They all kind of piggybacked off of that. But we're going to go with Asia's Heat of the Moment, number 8. And, of course, it's a little more of a euphemism there. It was the heat of the moment. Good harmonies on this thing, too. Asia was a band, too, that kind of came out of nowhere. Not from Asia. They kind of came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden they were very rock radio friendly, and so they were around a lot. This is obviously their biggest hit, but it applies to our list. And I wish it would be one of those things, too, where the heat of the moment would subside quicker. Even the nights are hot around here, man. It's true. All right, number 7, a song that probably should be a little higher on our list if we're just going by, you know, technical musicianship here, but it didn't necessarily have heat in the title, so I moved it down a little bit, but it's Foreigner's Hot Blooded. And I remember recently, I say recently, it's been a few years back, all the years run together when you get old, but you know, I like the Dan Rather interviews on Axis. You know, I can't say I'm always a fan of Dan Rather's personal politics, but Dan's a great interviewer, and he sits down on Axis TV and he interviews all these great people. And had a great interview with Foreigner. And then I remember another interview that Eddie Trunk did on that metal show. And Marty Friedman was there. Marty Friedman was on, I guess, Zoom out of Japan. Marty Friedman, of course, from Cacophony and Megadeth. Incredible guitar player. And Mick Jones was on stage on that metal show. And you can find this episode on YouTube if you want to go look for it. But Marty asked Mick, he goes, you know, what drugs were you on when you wrote the guitar solo to Hot Blooded? He said, it just, you know, it doesn't work on paper, but it works on the instrument. And great track. Very interesting guitar solo, for sure. Number 6, one of my favorite Bryan Adams songs, to be honest with you. And I don't know that it gets enough respect. You know, a lot of people know the big hits, but this was really popular on the radio for a while. But I love the guitar on it. I think Bryan Adams is probably a little bit underappreciated at times, but it's Heat of the Night. Absolutely love it. I think the composition of this song is near flawless. I think the vocal delivery is next level. And again, it probably, you know, everybody knows Run to You and We're in Heaven. Everybody knows that Reckless album because we had it. We loved it from start to finish because in my generation, we bought albums. We listened to albums. We didn't just listen to the singles. But Heat of the Night is one that I think really was kind of a triumphant return in many respects to Bryan Adams. Great, great song. Number 5, speaking of the 80s, this is a band that kind of dominated radio from the early to mid 80s. I mean, it seemed like they were constantly on the top 40. It's a band that we love and appreciate here on the Boneyard. It's Cool in the Gang. And for again, I point this out to you, Robert Cool Bell was not the singer. That was James J.T. Taylor. Robert Cool Bell was the bass player and the founder of the band. So it's Cool in the Gang. He's cool. They're the gang. We're going with Too Hot because I think we'd all agree it is. It's too hot. I'm looking forward to fall. I'm really looking forward to fall, maybe even October. Looking forward to blue jean weather. Looking forward to leather jacket weather. I really ever get too cold, but a lot of times I get too hot. And Great, 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 great song by Kool and the Gang here. Too Hot, number five. Number four, I used to think this song was a cover. And maybe it is, and I just hadn't done my research. But it has a throwback vibe to it. Even when it came out, it was like, okay, well, this sounds like it's a song from a different era. And it's Billy Idol's Hot in the City. And it is hot in the city, for sure. I absolutely love this song, always have. And again, it's kind of got that throwback vibe. Billy's a guy that's a little bit irreverent. And this song, honestly, is a little cleaner than what you expect from Billy. But great track, Hot in the City. And it's hot at night. There's so much that, around here right now. I'm just ready for things to cool off. All right, number three. I jammed this album in its entirety recently. And I remember when it came out, I was like, well, this is interesting. The percussion, the way that they mic'd the drums on this, the mix on this, was really unlike anything else of the era. And it's the supergroup Power Station that had Andy Taylor, the ultimate radio rock guitar player in many respects from that era. He was part of Duran Duran, and he was a guy too that was probably overshadowed by the stardom of Nick Rhodes and Simon Le Bon. But Andy's solo album, if you can find it, is great. It is great. It's an album called Thunder. It is great. And so this was kind of his first foray out of Duran Duran. Of course, Robert Palmer. Yeah, you know Rob. God rest his soul. Robert Palmer, of course, from Simply Irresistible and I Didn't Mean to Turn You On. That Riptide album is great, too. But they put this album together, and it's Some Like It Hot. I'm not one of those people, but Some Like It Hot. But the percussion on this, like when you turn this thing on, it is absolutely incredible in the car. So maybe you haven't listened to that album in a while. Probably one of my favorite tracks on the album is Communication Breakdown. Of course, they did a great, great, great version of T-Rex's Bang A Gong. And to be honest with you, that's a cover song that I think is better than the original. I know that's sacrilegious, but it's true. The mix on that is incredible. And the percussion, insane. Number two, a song that we hear regularly at Duty Noble Field. Every time we get a couple guys on bass, somebody hits a little click track, and next thing you know, Glenn Frey from the Eagles with one of his best solo joints pops up and lets us know the heat is on. I like those moments at Duty Noble Field when we have somebody on the ropes. I think we should probably do even more of that kind of stuff. It's true. But Glenn Frey, the heat is on. Great track, man. Glenn Frey, of course, left us a long time ago. And really, many of my favorite songs from the Eagles were Glenn Frey joints. It's true. And a lot of that stuff, too, he kind of matured as an artist. As a solo artist, he kind of got a little rocky again. You know, a lot of his songs with the Eagles were almost country. He was a great balladeer. But, again, Glenn Frey's The Heat is On, number two. Number one, though, another song that we hear regularly at Duty Noble. I have a little fun with Mike Nemeth when this song comes on. Mike sits to my right in the press box at Duty Noble Field. Everybody else is to the left. When Dave Murray's in town, he'll sit to the right of, so that's the interesting one. Like when they first opened the stadium, they gave me that seat, right? Seat one. And the vantage point isn't that great. So I eventually said, hey, I'd like to move down a little bit. And they do. So Dave sits in my old seat, which the view is somewhat obstructed by. But every time this song comes on, I don't say that I rap it, but I'll at least sing the chorus to Mike Nemeth. And it's Nelly's It's Getting Hot in Here, right? That's a song, too, that I think that a lot of people, every generation knows that song. It's one that's kind of synonymous with fun. And it's got some of the best lyrics of all time in it. It's true. The rhyming pattern in that thing is very different. But I love the whole ode to Jason Kidd, right? He says, you know, I got a friend with a pole in the basement. And he goes, oh, I'm just kidding like Jason, unless you're going to do it. It's great. What great wordplay, right? Great wordplay. Shout out to Jason Kidd and to friends with poles in the basement. But nevertheless, that's your top 10 list today. If you have ideas for the top 10 list, please reach out and let us know. You'll be glad you did. We may just use it. We've got a backlog a little bit here, too. But if you send something that is interesting, we'll move you to the front. Like today, I called an audible. I thought we were going to do worst cover songs. I need some more time to think about that. Planning to bring that back tomorrow. And I've had some people reach out and say, Steve, this was one of the worst cover songs ever. This has to be on there. And so I appreciate your submissions. And I may use some of them. especially if you write. Because I can tell you, I've already come up with some songs already that I think, I think it's a list that people are going to go, you know, Stevie Wright, it's terrible. It's true. It's true. But nevertheless, look forward to being back with you tomorrow. And we will. That's the plan, is that we'll do the worst cover songs tomorrow. I just need a little more time because I don't want to miss any terrible tracks. I don't. A lot of people out there think, hey, I'll go cover this. And then, of course, that old songwriter might be willing to sign off on the rights to that for a warm meal. You know, there's a lot to that. So when people want to cover your music, it's not like with the Prince or Lynyrd Skynyrd folks that are like, you know what, now we're not going to anybody touch this stuff. There are a lot of people out there that cover these tracks. But there's one in particular that I really like, but it has been universally criticized, of an old 80s hair metal song, and I love the original, but I like the cover version for different reasons. But a lot of people didn't get it, didn't like it, especially people from my area are like, no, you don't mess with songs like that. So that's on my list, but we want to make sure that we do a good job on it, right, as I'm writing that down to make sure I don't forget. So again, thanks as always for your contributions to the Top 10 list. You can find our list on Spotify under the handle Dogmatic67, DawgMatic67. And you can follow Roy on Twitter and engage with us. We had a lot of good reaction here as of late. A lot of people say, hey, Steve, you nailed this one. Steve, you missed that one. How could you put this list together without this song? I disagree with the order. I take all that feedback as game. It doesn't hurt my feelings in the least. So if you disagree with me, that's okay. That's one of those things, too, that the people that you love, you know, think they know you the best, and I guess in some respects they do. But that's somebody recently told me, you know, Steve, you don't like it when people disagree with you. What? Who does? But my attitude is, you're going to have to beat me in the argument. You can't just be disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable. If you're right, then prove to me you're right. Don't just tell me you're right or tell me that I'm wrong. That's how I feel about it. Well, you don't like people disagreeing with you. Well, so I don't like people stepping on my feet either. You know? It's all silly to me, man. It really is. But when it comes to things like this that are matters of opinion, you know, things that we love, you know, you got to leave some room for people to be themselves and to kind of advocate for the things they love. It's one thing, like, to kind of equate it, we'll get to baseball portal stuff here next, but it's like when people give me their opinion about something where they don't have the facts, right? It's like, well, we should have got this guy. And I'll give you a guy for an example. It's like the kid from Marist, the first baseman, Conrad from Marist. He knew where he was going before he goes in the portal. And then somehow we have some way to make that a criticism of Mississippi State. The self-deprecating, self-loathing stuff gets on my nerves. We're not going to get everybody. We're having a good portal class. Got to finish. But it's like, you know, well, it's my opinion that we're struggling. Well, okay, what's your opinion rooted in? And back in those days, we didn't have all these commitments. It's like, well, we should have gotten this guy. Well, how do you know we offered him? How do you know that he was ever interested? You know, like, here's what I'm going to encourage you to do. For all of you that feel that way, that feel that we should get everybody, no matter the circumstances. I know that you have a lot of confidence in yourself. And certainly you would not enforce standards on your football, baseball, or basketball coaching staff that you wouldn't enforce on yourself, because I'm sure you're an even-handed person. So here's something I encourage you to do. Because we should get everybody we go after. Because we're Mississippi State. Here's what I want you to do. You find Carmen Electra and Jessica Biel and those people on Instagram or TikTok or wherever. And I want you to invite them out on a date. And then I want you to send me the response, because you're not going to get one. But if you do, screenshot it, send it to me, and let us know how the date goes. Because we should get everybody we want, right? That's just not how life works. Steve, you're being ridiculous. No, I'm being honest. I'm being honest with you. That's the reality of things. You know, what do we do? Like, say, for an example, if a guy is determined, hey, I'm going to get closer to home, right? and that they live, or they're from, Oregon, right? How do you overcome the draw home, right? It's a different deal. And again, we have sometimes unrealistic expectations, not just of our baseball program, but just kind of in life in general. We think, well, how do we never get these guys? Well, sometimes we do. But sometimes we have to kind of recognize that in the neighborhood in which we live, we're not the biggest bully on the block. And then people are like, well, we never beat Tennessee for kids. Yes, we do. We never beat LSU for kids. Yes, we do. You know, I go back to here just recently, getting Chase Hungate. You beat Arkansas and Texas head-to-head in the final three. It's true. But that doesn't always fit the narrative, does it? You know, that doesn't always fit the narrative. So, again, please go ahead and hit up Carmen Electra. Let me know how that goes, because if you can date her, I probably can too. So send those out. Make your offer. Whatever NIL package you need to put together to get her to go on a date. You go out and you raise that money, and we'll see how things go. You know, see if you can get her to transfer. You know, maybe she's not happy in California. Maybe she wants to live in small town Mississippi. Who knows? Maybe she's got a Reese Witherspoon appeal to her. Maybe she's like, you know what? I'm going to move back to Sweet Home, Alabama. Maybe you should take that route. We'll see how it goes. Let me know. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. I love Campus Bookmart. You will too. If you don't already, you need to give them an opportunity to serve you so you can love them back. They already love you, even though they maybe haven't met you. Great people doing a great job for a great fan base for a long, long time. I love it when I go in there because I get so excited. I'm like, oh, I hadn't seen that. I want to get that. I know exactly where that would go. Or I want to buy this for my grandchildren. I want to buy this for my kids or my wife or whoever, or a recent graduate in the family. But we need to be getting geared up for football season. You don't want to show up next month for a home football game wearing last year's gear. You don't. You need to open up the season, the new season, with some new gear. And, Mom, unfortunately, a lot of these buying decisions fall into your lap. And so we're going to need you to use Campus Bookmart. And we can save you a little money. Go to campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal Boneyard listener, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That is BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than $75, absolutely incomplete. Again, go in there and check them out when you're in town. You'll be glad you did. You can swing in there and put some new gear on. And then head to the historic Mississippi State sporting venues. All right, we're not going to go quite as long today because I do have an appointment coming up. So I'm going to upload the show, come back, and I'll write the article over at Gene's page. And we got some more stuff working later today. But I do have an appointment today. Just an annual appointment. Nobody freak out. I'm good. I'm not going anywhere. Just got to go my annual vision appointment. So I got to do that. And those things creep up on you, too. It's like you plan them, and all of a sudden, I'm so glad to get that text reminder because the little card in the mail they used to send you, or the appointment card, that never makes its way to me. So thanks for technology. But let's talk a little bit about the portal. And a lot of people have said, hey, Steve, what's next? What's next? We get so caught up, right, especially when things are going good. The only thing better than this commitment is the next commitment, right? So again, we've got 8 commitments in the portal right now. 8. And I tell you, before I chase this too much, guys, as much as I don't like those guys, Ole Miss has got a beef. I mean, I think they do. And I understand it's the law of the jungle, right? I get it. It's a wild, wild west. But like this Andrew Fisher thing, and a great, great ball player. Really is. State did a good job against him. But guy's a really good player. And so they think they have a deal, and I haven't gone and done my own due diligence, but I remember some reports being made after he entered the portal that, hey, he had already agreed to an NIL deal, and everything was fine, and he was coming back. Well, now he and Liam Dole are headed to Tennessee, and I know Liam Dole's record's not great, but that kid's got talent. You know, came in, from, I think, from what, Coastal Carolina, came to Ole Miss, now he's back in the portal again, and those two – arguably Ole Miss's best pitcher, or most talented pitcher, and their best hitter are now headed to Tennessee. And if it had happened to us, there'd be blood in the streets, right? We would be upset too. And some would say, you know, it couldn't happen to a better bunch. And listen, I get that aspect of it. But the thing that I want to know is this really what we want? Is this really what we want? And so yesterday, there was a tweet that went out from 64 Analytics that said, hey, there's some big news coming involving the SEC and the portal, and everybody freaked out. And it kind of got me in that line of thinking, too, is, you know, with the Ole Miss stuff in mind, and the fact that there's not much regulation with this stuff, could there ever be a possibility where a guy flips in the portal? Well, you've seen some of that on the football side especially. But what about in baseball? Because there's kind of a gentleman's agreement in baseball recruiting. Once a kid commits, everybody just kind of says, hey, listen, keep us in mind should things change. And you move on with life. And so I hit up all 8 of our baseball portal commitments and said, hey, just send them a text. I didn't need a full-length interview to send them all a text. Like, hey, what's it been like since you committed? Are schools picking up the pace? Are they backing off? And to a man, they're all backing off. And I think that's important to understand. So it seems like it's kind of that transitive property, right? It's like in high school recruiting, when a guy commits in baseball, everybody just goes and casts their nets in other waters. And it appears that that is carrying over to the portal. But when's it going to happen? And it's going to happen at some point. I mean, it's not, again, it's a gentleman's agreement, but not everybody involved in the agreement's a gentleman, right? And so who will see an opportunity at some point and say, you know what? Now we're going to take that guy. It's going to happen at some point. I mean, it happens occasionally in high school baseball recruiting, occasionally. And again, there's a lot of those guys that they, quote, decommitted, and they may have just gotten processed out of a class. That's how we've done it, too. I mean, it's just kind of how life works. You know, especially with those guys committing when they were in the 9th and 10th grade. And maybe they haven't developed at the rate that we expect or another school expects. And people are like, you know what? We think you should go to junior college, and we're going to move on. It happens. It does. And it's not just something that's limited to the SEC. A lot of people need to fully appreciate that. But there will come a time that somebody, and maybe it's Tony Vitello of Tennessee. I don't know. You know, I've met Tony, had a chance to visit with him. He is an ultra-competitive alpha dog mentality guy. And that's a guy that loves winning. Probably loves winning more than anything else. And so will Tony flip a guy? I mean, you think about this, and like I've read all the narrative. You know, Ben McKee, who covers baseball for our Tennessee site with 247, does a good job. You know, Ben has come out and made some comments about you know, there's some allegations of tampering from, and maybe it's just the fans. I don't know on the administrative side how anybody at Ole Miss feels about this, other than the fact they're upset they lost a couple of very talented players. So I don't know if there's any formal allegations, but I know that like the social media and the message board community people have said, hey, there had to have been tampering here. I don't know if they have evidence of it, but they certainly have some passion about it. And now both of those guys are at Tennessee. And so I get that aspect of it. If I'm Joe Q Rebel and I'm thinking, you know what, this is not right. This is not right. But what's interesting to note is the NCAA does not recognize the term commitment, right? Because somebody is committed doesn't necessarily mean they're under the purview of the NCAA, certainly from the high school level, and they're not even members of the association. They may have registered with the clearinghouse, but they're not technically supervised by the NCAA until they sign a national letter of intent. Now, the schools that recruit them are, but the player itself is not. If they find out later that somebody accepted illegal inducements, there could be an eligibility issue. But the NCAA does not recognize the term commitment. There is no legislation out there involving commitments. It's not about what you say. It's about what you do. And so that leads me to this, the thinking that, and I've had these discussions with some people on the compliance side, is should we have a signing day for portal? Or should we have, you know, maybe go old school? When somebody makes up their mind, that they're already signing an FAA, right? They're already signing a financial aid agreement. Why not just go ahead and let them sign a national letter of intent, which binds them to the school? Now, that wouldn't have helped the Fisher situation, right? Because he's, you know, he decides to go in the portal, he decides to go in the portal. But I think there needs to be something a little more binding to provide some protection to kind of fend off poachers. That's just my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't think so. But I think there needs to be something put in place. And on the football side, too, it's so, again, the window is so narrow for them. There's not a lot of room to maneuver in that respect. But we have seen, again, kind of like the Ole Miss thing last year. They had a couple guys, or one guy in particular I can remember. I don't remember the name. But they had a guy that had committed to them out of the portal that ultimately went somewhere else. Well, and so I don't want to limit student-athletes' ability to kind of move throughout this process. But at some point, there has to be some protection for the schools. And we have skewed this thing way too far in the favor of student-athletes. And I've always been a person that has been an advocate. Hey, I want what's best for the student-athlete. I don't want to inhibit the student-athletes from being able to take trips and visits and things of that nature. But when it comes to matters like this, we've made a decision, and then the school is expecting this player to come, and then ultimately leaves at the last minute. And so not only do you lose maybe your number one, you lose 2, 3, 4, and 5 because of the fact you've told them, hey, we're good at this position. You'd find somewhere else to play, and then you end up having to go sign your 6th or 7th player. And some would say, you know what, Steve, that's just life and times in a big city. And there is some truth to that. There is. But I think it's interesting that it hadn't happened yet. And if it has, maybe we hadn't heard about it because it's not the SEC. But it's just a matter of time before somebody flips in the portal. I don't know if it happens this year or next year or 3 years from now. It is just a matter of time. And so that kind of got me on that line of thinking of, you know, what's it been like with these kids, you know, since they've committed to Mississippi State? And I can tell you, you know, based on what I know from talking to, you know, people close to the matter, when a guy commits to somebody besides Mississippi State, it's over. You know, and some of you would say, you know, no, we got to get in there and fight. It's just a different dynamic in baseball. I can't really explain it. It just is. It truly is. And so I share that because of the fact I think that we need to not be naive about that. We need to accept the fact that at some point that's going to happen. Now, we've had some deals in the past, you know, where some schools have kind of recruited kids that were committed to other schools in the high school ranks. But it will be interesting, and I feel like I'm belaboring the point a little bit, to see how this evolves over time. So what you really want to know is, okay, Steve, what's next for Mississippi State? Now, I do not expect a portal commitment this week. I think Chase Hungate on Sunday is probably your commitment this week. Now, like somebody asked me on the board earlier, what's been really quiet? Well, it's because we're at the end of the process, and you know, we're chasing a couple guys that that are still working through their visits. And so they're going to take those visits and then make a decision. And obviously, Cade Fisher is one of those guys, pitcher at Florida, dominant guy. And people say, but Steve, the ERA wasn't good last year. You know what? Look at that entire staff. The whole staff struggled under the direction of this new pitching coach. And things have just really kind of – he's been there, I guess, 3 years now. But things have kind of deteriorated. But, yeah, he's rated by Analytics 64 as the top pitcher in the portal. I don't know if that's true or not. And, again, I think those folks are doing the best they can with the data available. There's not a lot of data available to see how guys respond from transfers yet. Not a lot of that. And so they will get better with that as they go. They're doing the best they can, not being critical in any way whatsoever. I respect the fact that somebody said, you know what, this may be an opportunity here for me to kind of carve out my own niche and have my own analytics. And now if you notice, because there is, you know, basically a lack of that information, people just kind of defer to that as well. Well, these guys must know what they're doing. And I believe that they do in many respects. But the more times you do something, and the thing that I've learned about that too is like anything that's measured improves. Anything. Anything that is measured improves. And so because of the fact that this, again, it's in its infancy, every year these rankings will get better. And again, at the end of the day, it's an analytical model really kind of based on somebody's opinion of what they should emphasize, right? And so it's going to be an inexact science, but nevertheless, Fisher is their top-rated, maybe top-rated player. I know he's top-rated pitcher. And everybody's on him. Everybody's on it. Mississippi State remains in the mix with him. This is not a situation where, you know, we were in it early and he's kind of moved on. But he is working through his visits, and I understand that his last visit will be either this weekend or early next week. So we don't expect a decision from him unless there is a surprise until next week. There is also some other names out there that it's not like, well, where do we go if Fisher goes somewhere else? There are still a couple other names out there. It's true. There are a couple other names out there that that we're on. I'm not going to disclose those. But I think you could see, I hate to characterize it this way, but it's not a situation where it's Kate Fisher or bust. Now, obviously, there's not anybody out there with his comparable with his ability, but it's not going to be a situation where we're just like, you know, hey, this is it. You know, you could be done. You could take another. It just kind of depends on what's available. And then the draft will probably determine, you know, kind of what's next, you know, on the position side. You know, expecting one more. Now, if you get two great players that want to come, I think it puts Chris Amonis in a very interesting situation. You start thinking, hey, I've been recruiting, you know, four or five guys thinking I got one spot. What do I do if two really good players want to come here? Well, that's why he's paid the big bucks, right? But that could be a situation that we see unfold as well. You know, I think that's fair to anticipate that there could be a scenario where you either have to decide that I'm to tell somebody no. Now, to tell somebody no, is that the incoming player? Is that the returning player? Is that somebody that perhaps that you know, shows up and competes this fall? I don't know. But what I do know for certain is that Chris Amonis is paid to win and win at a high level. And this summer has presented us the opportunity to kind of build upon last year, because many of you people kind of felt like I did. I started thinking, you know what, hey, what are we going to look like next year offensively? He said, you're like, thank God for the portal. He said, you know what? We hadn't won, you know, really, really big matchups in the portal. We've gotten some good players out of the portal. We have. I go back to 2021. Scotty DeBrule, of course, that was when it was a grad transfer situation. The only guys with immediate eligibility were grad transfers. Well, then that changed, you know. And R.J. Yeager, same situation. R.J. Yeager comes in 2022 and was our best player. And then 2023, you look at Colton Ledbetter. And that was the big narrative, right? It's like, hey, you know, we're not developing these guys because the last couple of years, our best players have come from the NCAA transfer portal. Well, then you look at last year, it was a different dynamic completely, because you had Dakota Jordan. You had Hunter Hines. You had guys that have come up in your program. You've had Bryce Chance. You know, Connor Hizek, of course, with the transfer, and our best hitter in SEC play. But it took him, you know, 2 years to kind of figure it out. And to be honest with you, I think a lot of it's because Connor Hizek probably needed more reps in 23. And so you've got to manage both sides of this thing. You've got to be able to recruit the portal well. But I believe, much like Dave Van Horn believes, who I asked, posed this question to him back during the season, the nucleus of your roster has to be guys that come from the high school ranks, that know your culture, and you build around them and you supplement in the portal. Now, this year was completely different because of the fact that we're losing so much, losing so many position players. And in case you hadn't forgotten, you know, Johnny Long, of course, who was your starting catcher, is out of eligibility. Now, Joe Powell's going to be back. Ross Highfield's going to be back. We're going to be fine at catcher. We got four scholarship catchers. But he was your regular catcher, so he's gone. Logan Kohler, of course, started every game that he was healthy at third. He's gone. Imani Larry at second base, he's gone. Hunter Hines at first, we certainly expect him to be gone, right? Dakota Jordan, be a first rounder or maybe a compensatory pick in the first round. Connor Hizek, exhausted eligibility. So you start doing the math here and you're like, wait a minute, Steve. I got Bryce Chance coming back and that's the only sure thing for me? Because there was some chatter early on that Dylan Cup may go into Portland. People were kind of freaking out about that. And he kind of let us off the hook early, thank goodness. And then, of course, now we're waiting out to draft for Dave Marchand. So you start thinking about this as your Joe Bulldog, you know, on the way home from Charlottesville, you start thinking the only player that we're guaranteed to have back in our starting eight is Bryce Chance. And that was a scary proposition. And that's not a criticism of Bryce. It's just the fact you think we got to get so many pieces in the portal. We got a hit on these guys, right? And so we knew the task in front of us, and a lot of people said, you know what, next year's going to be rebuilding year. And I think Chris Simonis and the staff have shown that, no, it's not going to be. We've gone out, and we've worked hard, and we've gotten the players we need to put a very competitive team on the field. Now, what we can do in the next week may take us from being, a team that is picked middle of the pack in the SEC to probably in the top half of the pack. I think right now, if you had to call it, Texas A&M is easily your preseason number one, I think, and certainly your pick to win the SEC. But outside of A&M, there's not a lot of teams out there that have a ton coming back. I mean, Tennessee's going to always have some dudes. I mean, and give Tony a lot of credit. But it's going to be a much different league next year. Arkansas, of course, doing good work in the portal too. And they have a good nucleus. But, you know, Arkansas couldn't score. And so when you begin to think about next year, it's going to be outside of A&M. I think it's going to be pretty much wide open. And so that gives a team like Mississippi State a chance to kind of get back up in the upper echelon of the SEC. And you say, well, Steve, how high should we go? We finished fifth this year, right? But I'd like to be one of those teams that finishes top four and has a really good position heading into the NCAA tournament where we're not having to go to Hoover looking to win games in order to host. And I'm not going to talk anymore about that because you know my feelings. But I think we feel pretty good about where we are. But unless something changes, I don't think you should expect a baseball portal commitment this week. I think it happens next week. And, of course, the draft begins on Sunday. We come back tomorrow. We're going to do our draft preview. And kind of tell you what we think, what we're hearing, how things kind of project out to be. And then we'll have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday with the draft. And I got to send out some names to my staff, you know, to, hey, these are the guys you need to be watching for. But the reality of all this is that there really is no offseason. And as one of our great baseball posters over at jeanspage.com, Pedroia is king. Obviously, a guy that loves baseball, pick a username like that. He points out, you know, hey, the 2026s can start committing August 1st. I don't think you're going to see a ton of early traffic in that respect because before when guys would commit, they couldn't take visits, right? Have we considered that aspect of it? You know, when guys were committing as 9th and 10th graders, they couldn't take their visits. Well, now you can take visits, and it's an unlimited number of visits. So guys are going to take their visits, or at least take some, when they're eligible to do so. So I don't think, unless you just have the Mississippi State kid, you know, the kid that's always wanted to play at Mississippi State, I don't think you're going to see a rash of early commitments when it comes to the 2026 baseball recruiting cycle. Just my opinion. All right, final segment of the show, brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. If you're looking to bring a group of folks to town, a large group, whether it be a work group, a family group, a frenemies group, I don't know, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the best place to stay in the Golden Triangle for a large group. Instead of you having to go out there and get five hotel rooms, you got five bedrooms and two baths at your disposal at the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. It's the old renovated clubhouse. That's why we call it the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. And very easy to get to, right? Just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus, tucked away in a very, very quiet part of the county, just down the road from the Sprint Mart there, you know. So it's easy to go get some adult beverages if you need to. And there's a full-service kitchen there. You can buy groceries and cook your entire stay. There's a wet bar there, that great back porch area. It's amazing. It truly is. And then you've got the fire pit area. But, you know, we only got one neighbor out there, you know, so it's really quiet. They're quiet. We want you to have a good time, but let's not, you know, impede on their ability to enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But I'm going to tell you, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a situation where it's like, we just want to get out of town for a little while. And maybe you want to come enjoy Stargirl when it's not a ballgame weekend because things get pretty hectic around here, right? That aspect of life. When you come up here on ballgame weekends, you feel like the whole time you're here, it's crowded, it's a little bit people-y for you. Come up here and enjoy your favorite shops, your favorite restaurants, and come be a part of our community for a short time. Sure, we could check it out. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, there's going to be some booking options come up for you. You can use Airbnb. You can use VRBO. We don't judge. But if you want to save some money, I can help you do that with the Evolve website. Click Evolve when that option comes up, and use promo code BSR10. It's the number 10, BSR10, and get 10% off your stay. And you know what? Maybe you're trying to spend all your money before you pass away so your kids don't get any of it. Maybe that's your aspect. I don't know. But I know for me, promo codes are a way of life. I love when I can save some free shipping or have the opportunity to save some money on a stay. So be sure and use that. Again, Stark Vegas Clubhouse. You'll be glad you stayed there when you did. And again, maybe it's just a chance to get everybody together under one roof and just have a good time. Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Be sure and check it out today. All right. So football recruiting here. And everybody is just kind of getting back in the flow. You know, it's still a dead period now. And I shared with you guys a few days ago, I think this Tyler Lockhart thing is going to happen sooner rather than later. I think he is eager to kind of get things going and kind of get things over so he can focus on potentially winning another state championship at Winona. Of course, the first one in school history last year. He was a big part of that, huge part of that. And so I share that with you because that it's going to be a scenario that I think is going to be good for the class, but more importantly, good for the team. And when you think about he and Fat Clark having a chance to play together with the chemistry that they already possess, I think that's rather significant. And I think it also shows, too, you know, some strength in state. Tyler Lockhart is a name that people know. And so I think it's just really a matter of time. Probably happens this month. And I know, listen, we have some fans that, you know, it's like if things don't happen right away, we get nervous. I'm not worried about this one. I wasn't worried about it when he was committed to Auburn. I'm certainly not worried about it now. I had a chance to speak to Kyle Johnson yesterday. And I'll be honest with you, he spoke really more glowingly and really in more detail about Houston, which is sometimes kind of a hint and a half for you, you know. Now, what's interesting, Cortez Thomas, when I interviewed him, he barely said anything about Ole Miss. And maybe I should have pushed him more on that. And maybe I was too big of a homer there. I just said, you know what, there's no way he's going to Ole Miss. Why ask a follow-up question? So maybe that's on me. But I pushed Kyle Johnson a little bit yesterday. Hey, tell me what you like about each school and how you're going to break the tie. And he says, I want to go to the place that's going to win the most. That's an interesting observation to me. And I think we all see that, hey, it's probably going to be a year or two before Jeff Lebby really contends for anything, seriously. I mean, I'm not being negative. I'm a Jeff Lebby fan. But I'm just trying to point out here that it's probably not going to be a deal where we hit the ground and just set the woods on fire in year one. We need to have reasonable expectations. But if I had to call it today, I think Kyle Johnson is going to announce for Houston on Saturday. And I've read some people on the message boards that I can't believe we're having to sweat this thing out. This is a kid from Bunky, Louisiana, that really doesn't have any ties to us at all. He already had an existing relationship with Houston, and so we're trying to play catch-up here. I'm not going to sit here and make excuses for anybody, but this is a young man that was expected to commit to Houston prior to him taking a visit to Mississippi State. He comes in here. It's a family-type deal, and all of a sudden it slowed his process down. And there was a lot of people that said he committed to us on his visit. He did not. Again, I think that's just part of kind of getting caught up with all of the emotion of that great weekend, you know, because of the fact that, you know, Kyle was here and everybody else is talking so good. And you think, hey, let's, again, the only thing better than the current commitment is the next commitment. And so I think that was an aspect of it. And I'm not talking about anybody in the media. Some of our fans were kind of like, you know, hey, hearing Kyle Johnson committed too, but I can tell you that he did not. And you're just going to have to trust me on that. But we'd love to have him. Would absolutely love to have him in the class. I think he's a very good player. And I think a guy like him, if you've ever been to Bunky, Louisiana, chances are you had. You may have passed through there, you know, south of Alexandria, on your way to Ville Platte. You know, it's a different deal. And, you know, leaving there to go to Houston, it's going to be a big culture shock for the kid. But, you know, we'll see. I'll touch base with him again tomorrow before the decision just to kind of see where things stand. But as of now, I don't feel good about State getting him. I'd love to be wrong, because I do think he's a good player. But as of today, that's how I feel. I don't know how you feel, but after speaking with the young man directly, myself, and you don't really have the ability to do that, you're just going to have to kind of trust my judgment. I think that's going to be one that maybe things change. But as of now, just not expecting that him to be a Bulldog. A lot of discussion about Caleb Cunningham, and I have expected him to be a Bulldog really throughout this process. Well, I guess really since Jeff Lebby got here. This time last year, I did not think that he was going to end up being a Mississippi State guy. I didn't. Even with Bump on him. I think we needed to give Bump more bullets in the gun, and we do that with this offense. But, yeah, I mean, Alabama obviously concerns me because of their granted, it's a new staff, right? I mean, Labor and that group may do an outstanding job. Don't know yet. Don't know. Or they may get swallowed up in the expectations of that program. I don't know. But the proximity to home bothers me because that was the thing that I was told that one of State's biggest benefits is, number one, it's close to home, and his family loves Mississippi State. They'd love for him to be close. And so when I started hearing all this talk about Florida and everywhere else, I'm like, no, it's not going to make sense. Alabama makes some sense. Now, I'm not ready to change my crystal ball pick, and I think even if he commits to Alabama in the next few weeks, it's not over. Mississippi State is certainly not going to give up. And the number one thing, the only thing left for State to do is to put this offense on the field and show him that he can come in here and showcase his ability and get to the National Football League. We have not put a receiver in the league in forever and a day, and that is something that is utilized on the recruiting trail against us every time that we recruit a receiver. And he said, but Steve, we had that great receiver class last year. We did. And a lot of that's based on a promise. And you also noticed, too, a lot of those are in-state guys and guys that Bumpus has been on for a long time. And so we've got to go out here and give Caleb Cunningham a reason to say yes. I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's not going to commit to Alabama because I don't know that I believe that. You know what I'm saying? I can't sit here and say this is not going to happen. I do think, again, that he is, even if he commits this summer, that he is going to continue to take his visits, and I do believe Mississippi State will get him on campus. But, again, you know, it's not that far to Tuscaloosa. It's a lot closer to Starkville, but it's not a scenario where, you know, he'd be, you know, several states away. So that is concerning, and anybody that is not willing to admit that is just being a little bit too much of a homer. But, you know, we've got to do a good job there, and I think we've done everything we can possibly do to make him feel like a priority. But also, too, feel like that, hey, you are our guy, and we're going to be with you until the very end. And now it's just a matter of you got to show him what you can do. You know, it's one thing for him to come to a practice. It's not a thing for him to come to a ball game and see those wide receivers streaking wide open and free in the secondary because you have schemed people up and you're able to deliver the football. I think Jeff Lebby's going to score a lot of points. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I can guarantee you Caleb Cunningham's going to be a Bulldog. But I believe, without a shadow of a doubt, that Jeff Lebby will remain personally involved in the recruitment of Caleb Cunningham until National Signing Day. And, again, I maintain some level of optimism that he is going to be a Bulldog when it's all said and done. But it's really in our hands. I truly believe that. And not to mention, too, it's like we don't know what this – Alabama offense is going to look like either. We don't know. And I think, you know, when all those people got all juiced up and started crystal balling Caleb to Mississippi State, you know, around the industry, a lot of people are like, you know what, hey, this is happening. And then all of a sudden Alabama makes a push. I'm like, hey, this is happening. But he is definitely an impressionable young man. And I think, again, you just got to stay the course. You know, recruiting is not always for the faint of heart. It's truly not. You got to stay in the game, and most of us probably couldn't be college coaches, and I don't just mean because of a skill level, you know, or a talent level, but I don't know that we got the patience to do it. I mean, you got to deal. I mean, you can't get your high school kids to take out the trash on time, you know, and then all of a sudden you got to go recruit a guy that you, all of a sudden your livelihood depends on that player's performance, and there are other people out there that are in his ear that, you know, maybe singing a sweeter song, but you got to stay the course. And how many times do you see it on message boards or social media? Oh, I'd be done with this kid. I'd be done with this kid. I'd be done with this kid. Not everybody views Mississippi State in the light that we do. They have to be convinced, and that's the part of your coaching staff, is to have the opportunity to convince them that, hey, this is the right opportunity for you. And I think Jeff Lebby, of course, in the month of June, absolutely killed it. I go back to December. Absolutely killed it. Lebby gets it. And it's just going to take a little while. You know, it's a first-year coach. You know, he's a first-year head coach. And I think, you know, the passing grades so far on the recruiting side have been very good. But you got to finish. And that's really the aspect of things now. All right, we're going to go ahead and close this thing out today because I've got an appointment, as I mentioned. And so thank you all so much for your time and effort and your support of the Boneyard. But until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.